Welcome back to Sighted. It is your girl, Ra Ali, and today we have a very special guest. He came to America with nothing but a suitcase, a thick-ass accent, and a dream. Fast forward, he is a whole Hollywood name, a global comedian, and calls himself the African King of comedy. And honestly, he's not wrong. From grinding on the stand-up scene to popping up in movies like Next Friday, Michael Blackson flipped his hustle into a career that most people only dream about. But it's not just about jokes with him. In 2023, he built a school back in his village in Ghana. So yeah, he gives back in a real way. He's a dad, a fiance, a businessman, and finally, a U.S. citizen. Which he straight up said was the happiest day of his life. So today, we're talking about everything, the hustle, the love, what's trending, the wild stories, and what's next. You already know. Welcome to Sighted, and welcome the one and only Michael Blackson.
Well, I might be American, but my dick is still African. Let's keep that in mind. Okay?
That's cute. That's cute. Okay. You once talked about kids in Africa starting work as young as 7, and that hustle mindset hits different when you grow up with a struggle. What is it like for you growing up in the motherland?
Growing up in Africa, beautiful. I remember being a kid. I grew up mostly in Liberia. And what we just do is just, we wake up, we go to school. And school is a privilege. It was hard to get in school. Lots of times in Africa, there are a few government schools, which is in America, you guys consider public schools. And because they're semi-free, not completely free, just certain things would be free, but you still have to pay for books and uniform and things like that. And a lot of times, kids cannot afford those things. So again, school in Africa is such a privilege. And lots of time when the government schools are filled up, all that's left for is private schools. So if you can't afford a private school, then you just don't go to school. So as a kid, go to school, after school, you do your homework, we play soccer, we go into the field. I grew up very in a remote area. I didn't grow up in the city with money. I remember my mother had 7 kids by my dad, and then my mother gave her life to Christ, and she said, my dad and I wanted to live that life. So my mom packed our stuff and left out of, and went to a whole different country. And raised us there and got remarried, and that's kind of where I grew up.
That's when you guys moved to Liberia?
Right.
Okay.
And that's where I grew up and became a Liberian citizen, like I said, it was fun being, I was little. I mean, I got to Liberia probably like 3, 4, 5 years old. I'm not sure you guys know the history of Liberia.
No, tell us,
please. So Liberia is when slaves were let free back in the 1890s, whatever it was, most of them went back to Liberia. They went residing in Liberia. And if you notice, Liberia is set for liberation. And lots of those, it wasn't that many, probably like 5 or 10,000 people that went back. And because it came from America, they were the intelligent ones. They were the educated ones. So back in from the 1890-something all the way to 1980, presidents of Liberia were black Americans. They went back with those names, the Johnsons, Williams, all those popular American black names that most black Americans use, Talbert. All their names were all from America, So meaning when they went back, because they were intelligent ones, their children became president. They, their descent became president because they were smart. They were educated. So black America has a huge history with Liberia. They need to go back, need to connect more to Liberia. And I remember, and they gave them a name. They were called Conquer People because they didn't have a tribe. So most of the presidents from, like, as far as I remember, I don't know much of the 1890s, but I remember being there in 1980, and it was Talbert. Talbert was the president, who was from a black American descent. He was born in Liberia, but his grandparents came from, the 1800s, whatever. And after around like 1980, is when I think that was just when they had the first coup. A coup is like when, you know, it happened in Africa a lot in the 70s and 80s. When they get tired of a president, they just knock him off. They find a way to kill him. That's what happened back then. When the people hate you and they're tired of you, just you're getting rich and nobody else is getting money, and they realize, because lots of time, I mean, a lot of presidents, you know, it's a money grab. And then you up there, you enjoying this life, why would you want to let the life go? You know, until they came up with these four-term things, and now everywhere is has those terms where you have to get reelected.
And people have to vote, and their voice matters.
Liberia is one of the countries that has a six-year term. So that's and they just, like I said, all that started in the past 20 years. Mm-hmm. You know, prior to that, you know, like Talbert, yeah, I remember being in Liberia with the kid. I remember Talbert was president, and I remember he was taken over by the military, a local guy named, I'm not sure he was the main guy, but Samuel K. Doe, he took over, he became the president. So he was a military president, and he was a native, you know, he was like, not a conquer man, crew or crown or something, I'm not sure what tribe. And then later on, I think a guy that took over him, that knocked him off, was a conquer man.
Okay.
You know, it was like a revenge, I think.
Right.
Charles Taylor took over. You know, so it's so far and so far. But like now, Liberia is amazingly great, peaceful place. Boakai is a new president. Boakai is an older guy, you know, that's passionate, very passionate about the country. You know, I'm very good friends with like him, his wife, and his son. And you know, we Liberia is my next destination. I'm gonna jump into like. But Liberia is where I'm going to build my next school. So let's go back to my childhood life in Liberia.
Yes.
Liberia was so much fun back then in the 80s. You know, and I remember, like I said, our childhood was great. I had my mom, my brothers. You know, at this time, my mom had seven kids. It was five boys, three girls. You know, my oldest brother, he kind of like moved to the city. He was probably like, as a teenager, he moved to the city to go work. And it was just me and my brothers in this town called Kakatown. And, you know, we share one bike. It didn't matter. I was a happy kid.
Right.
You know.
And you don't know any different, right?
I didn't know any difference. Like, you know, you're happy what you have as a kid. You don't worry about nothing. You're not paying no bills.
Right.
You know. And I remember we'll go, like, in the remote areas of where I live, and we'll play soccer. But we didn't even have soccer ball. We'll play with, like, grapefruit. To bus open, and we get another grapefruit and play till this bus open.
Right.
But it was so much fun.
Absolutely.
You know, and then my mom, who, like I said, was an evangelist, and she built out a relationship because my mom would like leave us with different church members and then go travel to preach the gospel. That's what she did her whole life.
Like a pastor.
Well, yeah, an evangelist. Evangelist usually travels. Yeah, pastor usually stay at the church.
One church.
Evangelist is someone that travels different countries and go preaching the gospel. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, she ended up in America at one point.
Who was covering the cost of this?
A lot of time it's an invitation from a church.
Got it.
We send you an invitation. You go to the embassy, try to get a visa, you know, and then the church will give you a plane ticket and everything. So you come out there and you preach. Mm-hmm. And that's what she did. I think that's how she got her first trip to America. She felt like America was a promised land. And when she came back, you know, she said, "One day I'm gonna get you guys to the promised land." Now, people think it's just as simple as going to buy a plane ticket and packing up your family and coming to America. It's not that easy. It's not even close. 90% of every black person, whether you're in any part of Africa or Jamaica, you know, besides other islands that are much closer, like Bahamas and like Bermuda, they might be a little leaning on them because they're close enough to America. But when it comes to countries in Africa, and you with this skin, 90% of the time you're getting turned down for a visa. America or Europe, they want to know why you coming, when you leaving. You know, if they have any comfortability or feel like you're not going to go back to your country at all, you're getting turned down. You know, so
And we don't think about these small things that are huge things because you're just thinking about how simple it is for us to travel to everyone else's country.
Right.
And you don't realize how much of a privilege it is to be able to do something so simple.
It is. That's like when you mentioned me being an American, you know, like, trust me, at one point, you know, as long as I had like a permanent residence and I could come and go as I please, and it was, you know, I could still make money and work and do whatever, I was cool with that. I never want to lose being an African by becoming an American, but it's difficult trying to travel to Europe with an African passport. You have to go get a visa. You have to, you know. So getting an American passport was just much easier for me. And I'm glad I did it now. I did it then because look what's going on right now.
Absolutely. It would be so challenging right now.
Right. Right now is not a good time for that.
I'm wondering if I'm going to get back in when I go, when I travel next
week.
No, you're
going to be okay.
Are they going to
get... American, they're going to let your ass back in here. Right? You need your tax money.
They're going to be like, you know what? If you want to keep heading over there, stay your ass over there. What you say your last name was again?
You changing the name, motherfucker. So America, it always been a promised land to my mom. You know, she said she's gonna get us here. And I remember at one time she took all of us, packed our bag, we went and got passports, and we went to the embassy and denied. Yep. And when you deny you, you know, now it's different now. When they deny you now, they don't, like, put in your passport. Back then, when they deny you, they stamp in your passport, denied. So now if you ever try to go back again, like, well, why you got denied?
Yeah.
So they made it so difficult, you know what I mean? And sometimes people would go to a whole different other country, get another country's passport, and go, because it wasn't during the time where you could, like, fingerprints and stuff like that stays with you. So you could go to another country and become another citizen of another country just to go try to get a visa again because... your passport that you have from your country is no good now with that.
Wow.
Oh, it was difficult.
That is crazy.
Yeah, so my
mom... Why do you think that system was in place? If you just had to guess. Is it just because we're black?
Yeah. Yeah, because, Europeans don't have... You know, Europeans could just come and vacation and use any excuse and come as they please, as long as they go back within their 60 or 90 days, whatever it is. For us, oh, no. Black people, or no, America made it very difficult, you know. Now, being a Liberian citizen, because Liberia had slight little ties to the United States, it might be a little bit easier, you know. Maybe instead of 90% being turned down, maybe 50% was turned down, being a Liberian citizen. You know, and then with Ghana and Nigeria and Gambia, those are British colony. So with those countries, it's probably easier for them to go to London. Maybe 50% get turned down instead of 90% because British has a tie with those countries, you know?
I love it. I love it, and I know the audience will love it to really hear about everything, but in a plain way. Because when you hear things on the news or you're reading, there's a lot to it that's hard to kind of translate into plain, simple, explain to me what the problem is or what was happening. So we could, you know, do it in a little extended education on that. Yeah. I think it's very interesting.
I would love to educate the Black Americans.
Absolutely. OnSite actually has an Africa division that I launched about a year ago. It's called OnSite African Edition. And it gives, you know, updates on viral news and trending topics and all that kind of stuff. And we also talk about what's happening, the positive, the negative. We talk about those things. And so people are a lot of times very confused. They have a perception of something. It's not necessarily what it is. And I feel like it just became popular, which we can get more into. Mm-hmm. It just became popular very recently for us to be interested in what's going on in the motherland, which is very... it feels very trendy instead of a necessity of what should be happening. But I want to... there's so many layers to you. I want to know, what do you remember the most about coming to America, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what sticks out in your head? And tell me if it was hard to fit in.
Oh, it was hard. It was. So I remember coming, it was April, whatever year it was, cold as hell. I landed, my first stomping ground was Newark, New Jersey, Brick City. I want to say whatever family it is that my mom was friends with, met us at the airport with some coats. You know, because it was cold. So I remember landing at JFK, and then we drove to Newark. And by the time I got here, I came with my mom and my youngest sister. Prior to that, my mom has already been here and brought my sister that's next to me. So my mom goes was to slowly bring us little by little. Mm-hmm. My younger sister was already in America.
Okay,
she's been in America for about 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in fact, she has her own little struggles. I know she went through. But with me, when I came, it was like cold, you know. And I remember probably going outside to play for the first time, and my accent, kids clown me.
Mm-hmm.
Made fun of my accent. And you know, 14-year-old kids in America, it's much more advanced. Don't get it wrong. They're more advanced than us. And I'm out there watching the kids. I murdered some kids across the street that play basketball. So I go out there and try to play, and I ain't know nothing about no damn basketball. You know, then they're out there playing football. I didn't understand this game. Why are they chasing this octagon? Right. So, you know, so it was tough to just fit in there. I think the roughest part was when I eventually had to go to school. I remember the first grade I went to, I think it was eighth grade. I think my reading skills were a little bit lower than American kids, but like math was my favorite subject and everything else. As long as you listen to the teacher and do your homework, you'd be all right. You know,
right.
I was able to catch up and still ended up in like honor roll class and
amazing.
Stuff like that.
Yeah. So you did well in school.
I did very well in school. Well, I mean, with Africa, man, we love school. In America, the jocks are the one that get the girls. In Africa, it's more the opposite. Like the smart ones are the one the girls want to talk to.
Mm.
You know, the intelligent ones. So we took education very serious. And besides class, I caught up and I was able to like get good grades. Just the kids were mean every day. Oh my God! Because you know when I came, mind you, I came from we had no money. You know, my mother had zero money. I remember going to go shopping for school's clothes and. Back then, before they had Walmart, they had like Woolworth and Macquarie's, you know, just and they even sold sneakers and like some supermarkets. So I remember my mother taking me shopping. I went and bought some clothes. I bought she bought me like this, a few church pants and dress shirts. I'm like, Mom, I'm going to school. She bought me church clothes for school, and then went to Pathmark. And saw some sneakers in there and bought me some sneakers. And then, so here I am going to school with some church clothes and chicken flavored sneakers. Because this sneakers is right next to chicken. Like you buy chicken and a sneaker. So here I am with some brand new sneakers that she bought next to some chicken. So I got those sneakers. I think they were called In Action. It wasn't no Puma, Adidas, nothing, but it was In Action.
Mm-hmm.
But it was new, and mm-hmm. because back home when I was a kid, before Gucci and Versace and, you know, even back in Africa, like we didn't, in the 80s and 90s, they didn't care about name brand. They didn't know what it was. It didn't, except for the rich one. There are some rich people that know about those things, but like poor people didn't know about that stuff. Now, with poor kids, how girls attracted to poor kids, is them wearing a new clothes. If you wear brand new clothes, girls are like, okay, you got new clothes. So, you know, girls find it attracted to a guy dressed in nice new clothes. So I came to America, I'm going to school my first day. I got on new clothes. I'm excited. I think I'm about to get some girls. I'm like, you know, I got some new shit on. So I walk in school in my, you know, with my In Action sneakers and dress pants and dress shirt. And the kids like, what the hell you got on, nigga? I'm like, what you talking about? This is brand new. American kids could be mean. I'm like, nigga, this is brand new. They're like, brand new. I'm like, this like it's not Adidas, it's not Puma, it's not Lee jeans, it's not. I'm like, my nigga, it's brand new. Nobody has ever worn this before in their life. Because in Africa, you get a lot of hand-me-down. My shit was brand fucking new.
Yeah.
They lit my ass up. I got lit up so hard, and it was nothing I could do about it. My mommy had $30 to go buy me some Adidas sneakers. You know, I had to buy some $9.99 pair of In Actions. But I got no action with them In Actions.
Right.
And so during the summertime, the neighborhood we lived in, somebody told me about this guy that took kids around to go selling candies to make money. You know, it was a Muslim guy. He'd take us like different neighborhoods, and he... It was called Mount Calvary Youth Corp, you know, and he gave all these lines to like lie to these rich people just to sell these candies.
Mm-hmm.
This nigga was Muslim, man. He promoting a church. That's how I knew. He's a Muslim man promoting at Mount Calvary Youth Corp.
Oh, right.
right.
So we'll go knocking doors and sell these 50 cent candies for like $3.50. And then we got like, I was earning about $75 a week. So I was able to save my money. And then for 10th grade, I went, got me some, you know, Reebok and some outfits.
Okay, that. So now you pulling up. Now is it the same up. School?
No, now it's a different school. But the okay. kids that graduated from there all went to that school.
Okay.
So now, you know what I mean? I'm fast forwarding because I just wrote my book. It hasn't come out yet. So all of this you can read in the book. This I'm just fast forwarding to like how things got good.
Okay.
So, you know, did that. And then now I'm in school now, 10th grade, you know, and the kids are like, oh, God, my God, Reebok, okay, my head. You know,
super materialistic. So just materialistic. Sad, sad, lost souls.
You know, you know what? It's just where the kids are. We can't blame them. I mean, anything happened, it's been brainwashed.
Since the beginning of times.
Yes. So yeah. I never, you know, I mean, with all the names I got called from African Booty Scratcher to all those things, like, it never really, as an adult, you know, I mean, it bothered me as a kid a lot, you know. But now as an adult, I'm like, those kids ain't know any better. In America, well, Black America, I think the kids kind of remind me of Adam and Eve when God's like, don't eat the apple because you're going to see things you're not supposed to see. And I think that's what happened, like, to Black American kids. Like, when I came here, a lot of things about myself I didn't know. And it reminded me. Like, you know, you have a gap teeth. I mean, like, Africa, we never, like... American kids see every little thing. I mean, don't get wrong. All that stuff helped me today to make me the roaster that I am. Like, I light a nigga up. You know what I mean? But because I learned from them. You know, like, I didn't, believe it or not, I say that all the time. And people don't, I didn't know I was dark skinned until I got here.
They just strip, if you ask me to strip your innocence away.
They did.
Yeah.
This is my innocence. And they made me so self-conscious about everything. And, you know, and back then it was in my like late 80s, early 90s, where they didn't find dark to be attractive, you know, and I didn't know I was dark. So now you tell me I'm dark and it's ugly. I got a gap teeth, it's ugly. My hair's nappy, it's ugly. I have an accent. I'm some, you know, village. It's what I see on TV as African, you know. So they made me aware of those things. So now I'm self-conscious about them. You know what I'm saying?
I have a question that's completely, because we're discussing... Simply because we're discussing complexion.
Right.
You have to be super honest with me, all right? Is it true that African men that are successful prefer super, super, super light women, not necessarily white, because it's a reflection of how much money you have? Is that a real thing?
I never heard of that.
Okay.
I think it's all is television.
Okay.
It's all TV. You go back to the 80s and 90s, what did they put on television? Light-skinned women. It barely any dark women. So, and a lot of time, you know, kids are attracted because you attracted what you see a lot of. You know, that's what they're pushing on you. That's what they're telling you is beautiful.
Society, yep.
Society.
Just like they say, you know, thin or shaped like a model, the runway, the thin girl. You know, they do that as well.
Like I said, I think it's you know, women wants to look like what they see on TV, what they see on music videos. And that became a thing across the world in, you know, in recent times. You know, I mean, don't get it wrong. I remember a few women bleaching back in the 90s and stuff like that, you know. But okay. Like I said, because of what... Women want to look like what they think men are attracted to.
Right, but it's not an actual thing.
It's not an actual thing. Most Ghanaians are darker complexion. I mean, again, there might be a few that bleach their skin here and there, but they're mostly dark complexion. And, I mean, to me, I think they are the most beautiful women on earth. You know, the darker they are for some reason, you know.
Do you ever plan to move back to Ghana full time? At some point, even if it's in the future.
Well, not just Ghana. I mean, I would spend more time in Africa, between Ghana and Liberia. I mean, I have a lot of friends in Nigeria. I think once I slow down work, like I'm slowly slowing down. I've been telling jokes like 28, 29 years. So I'm, you know, about 10 years ago, back in like 2015, all the way to like 20, to the pandemic, whatever, I was on a paper chase. You know, I was hot in the streets, and I'm like, okay, while you're hot, get this money. And I went and made all the money that I could make and got everything that I needed and I wanted.
All right, so you're based in Miami now. What do you love most about the city?
Do you even know why I'm in Miami?
No. Tell me.
I'm here to do Love & Hip Hop Miami. That's the main reason. So even when I moved to LA from I was raised in Philly.
You're joking, right?
I'm dead serious. Like probably the number two main cast member for this season. Here's the thing, believe it or not, y'all could talk all y'all want about reality shows.
You're lying.
Reality shows, to an entertainer that has like a name. They pay more than scripted shows.
Of course. And are you serious though?
I have a little music thing. But at the end of the day, these shows are now looking for good stories.
We were trying to figure out if you're joking.
I'm not joking. That's why I'm looking. That's why I'm here immediately now. I've been looking for a place for a while, but I've said to myself, what's going to motivate me to really make that move is a bag. And Miami had a bag for me. So that's the main reason why I'm here.
So this is the truth?
Yeah, am I joking? Yes. I'm here doing a season of that, and then we'll see how it goes. You know, but like it's a whole lot about me y'all gonna learn. I can't talk about it now because unfortunately.
Then you gotta, there'll be no reason to watch, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, you know, the first time I adapted into reality was Couples Retreat. Did you watch that?
No.
For real, that was on VH1's, like had me and Ryda was on there. And then the first season had me, Ryda, Ray J, and Princess, Kirk, and Rashida.
Yeah, uh-huh.
It was like a 7-8 episode series we did it during the pandemic, and they got to like know a lot about my life. And then from there on, reality just been interested in my life. And you know, the last time I did a scripted show recently. Tyler Perry Studios gave me a sitcom. I don't know if you guys saw it at all. Mm-hmm. But called the Michael Blackson Shows on BT Plus.
Mm-hmm.
And we did 4 episodes of pilot. A pilot usually is like you shoot a show and then later on it's decide whether they want to do more or not. But that show was probably the best, funniest thing I've ever done. If you haven't seen it yet, go to BT Plus, watch the Michael Blackson Show.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hit up Tyler Perry Studios and tell them why this show is not on.
Please do.
This show is not on.
Power of the people. So.
Make no sense to me why this show. And the thing about it, when we were done filming the show, Tyler texted me himself like, Mike, this show is so amazing. I can't wait to do more of this. And then all of a sudden, nothing happened. What? I mean, between the strikes, the acting strike and everything else that happened, it all added into like this thing being pushed aside for now.
Okay. See, I think it'll be entertaining. I think it'll actually add a different component to reality TV because you're funny as hell. So to have you, you know, there.
Real life. Get the real life Michael Blackson.
Yes. I think it'll be your natural self.
You know, my life and my kids and everything. So they're a little more interested in my story. So Love & Hip Hop Miami is going to be a crazy season.
And you just welcomed a new baby.
That's right.
Congratulations.
I'm a whole dad. That's right. Look at him.
Oh, he's beautiful. This is your first child?
First child, no. I mean, my youngest are 18.
How many children do you have?
I have 20 boys that are 18 and I have a 27-year-old.
Okay, that's not much.
I think the most important thing you could have 100 kids. You could be Nick Cannon or Elon Musk, as long as you got money. I mean, when I had my son at 22 years old, I was broke and a man with no money and all of a sudden a baby, you nervous and then things don't work out. She take your child support for your little $200-$300. All that shit, painful. But like when you have money, like, you know, I mean, the baby needs time and love and all that stuff. But I think at the end of the day, the woman just make sure if money's there, they'll be happy. You know what I mean? So I think the most important, yeah.
It's real.
I love kids, you know. I mean, but my last experience, like the 18-year-old twin boys, I went through so much hell with their mom. That, you know, it kept me from even trying to have another kid.
What nationality was she?
She's Greek.
Oh.
Yeah. My oldest son, mom, is black from Philly.
How was she as a
who?
The mother of your child? The black one.
She was cool. I mean, it was I married young. I married and divorced like after 2-3 years later.
And then what nationality is your most current mother
of your child? Cambodian.
Cambodian. So you did Greek.
I did black, Greek, Asian. Cambodian. My dick don't discriminate. You know, but the thing about it, I've been pushing this thing called Make America Black Again, okay? As black as I am, it don't matter who I fuck, I'm guaranteed a black baby. I could fuck a ghost, I'm gonna have a dark skinned baby, no matter what the hell. So I'm still making black
children. The Cambodian baby is not black.
Man, he's a little confused.
Right.
I'm up eating fufu with soy sauce, confused little baby. But the first thing is so funny. I'll show you a video when he came out. Uh-huh. And the first thing black people, what the first thing we look for? What the first thing we look at?
The complexion.
How we find the complexion?
Ears.
Exactly. So like all these white people and the baby's laying on a thing, you know, and I went right to his ears. I said, oh yeah, that's definitely my son.
Yes!
No DNA needed. And I was telling the white nurses, because they had no clue. I said, in black world, we look at the ears. The ears don't determine his complexion. His ears were black as hell. And then he was born with this birthmark. Like, I have a birthmark right here on my arm. My twin boys, one of them have him on his ass. Like, birthmark is big in my family.
Okay.
And that's the first thing I saw my son, little black spot.
So you have
right
all
here.
Boys?
All boys.
You got to have a girl.
No, I'm good.
No, you got to have a girl.
No, God is doing me a favor. It's, you know, I don't think I'm a cute girl. Like, how cute can a girl be coming?
What, she can be beautiful.
What a cute girl gonna look like this?
Beautiful.
No, I'm sticking with the boys, okay?
I hope you got that tight shot.
But it is, I think, man, you could almost control what you have, what you could have, I think. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of time when you have a girl, a lot of time the woman is on top. I think so. All my kids came, is wrong?
That is complete wrong. Foolish.
You have kids?
Yes, I have two daughters.
And was you on top? Oh, are they twins?
No. One is 3 and one is 4.
Oh, you didn't waste no time. Boom, back to back. Did you wait that 6 weeks you're supposed to wait? Exactly, nigga. You're supposed to wait 6 weeks, okay? You're getting your back to back. But they always say that God, they always say like God always punish men that are dogs and give them daughters.
Mm.
I should have been punished.
Right.
A whole lot.
Give us the real. So I want your fiance, Rada. Is that how you pronounce her name?
Rada.
She manages you now, right?
Yeah.
She manages all your business. So I
most
really want to know, what are the pros and the cons to working with your partner? Mm-hmm. And if you ever run into any challenges, like,
Yeah, definitely. I mean, sometimes when she's mad at me, I don't get a reply back. When it's me, I'm about my business. I don't give a fuck how you mad at me. Get my money together, because I'll fire your ass. You know, so it'll be times where she's mad and if I need information or something, I don't get it right away, you know, but then she'll think twice and still try to, you know, because women just want everything to be nice and sweet, you know, women just want a happy family at the end of the day,
yeah.
You know what I mean? But, you know, business is business. And it's probably more cons. It's probably not the greatest thing in the world. You know, you do want to keep the money in the family. That's important. Like, why am I going to pay somebody this amount of money when I could just keep it in the family?
Absolutely.
If I'm paying her, then why? I'm saving money.
It's the truth. Instead of paying someone else outside of you. Yeah. First of all, the business is mostly already coming to you because you're already a notable
exactly.
named person.
It's easy.
So now you're giving somebody 15 to 20%, or even if it's 10% of money that was coming to you anyway, instead of keeping it in your house. It really doesn't make sense. Yeah. But you gotta make sure she don't have no attitude, cause honey.
Well, and I think she's gotten over that part, cause she
okay.
know how I feel about my money.
Right,
you know
right.
What I'm saying? So I think.
Or if she has an assistant, then she could be like, send this to Michael.
That's it, as long as it's right.
Let me take this somewhere else real quick. So this is something that I personally find very interesting. On many levels, we've talked about it previously, myself and other podcasts, and I want to know your real take on it. You guys have talked about bringing women into your relationship. Are you allowed to bring the woman on your own? Have you guys changed the strategy as to how you bring women home?
I mean, Rada just pretty much just...
Hold on, should I... Are you cool with French?
Montana?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, of course.
Here, answer. Answer.
Palm Beach nigga.
Hello? Drop a comment if you've learned something new. Repost it, tag your people, and keep watching.